So we have a panel discussion today on actuaries as CROs, and we have three excellent panelists here who I will introduce shortly. So the format's going to be a short presentation from each of the panelists covering four topics: the role of the CRO and the challenges the role faces. Number two, what makes a good CRO? Number three, how actuaries can contribute to this role, what skills they can bring to it, and which skills they need to develop further. And number four, how the role of the chief actuary and appointed actuary operates with the role of the CRO. We'll then have some time to take questions for the panel, so I'd encourage all of you to start thinking about questions you might like to put to them. And some examples of the kind of questions you might want to ask might be, why would an actuary want to be a CRO? How have we become carried away with the three lines of defence model? And how can we avoid chief risk officers becoming like this? The link's not working, so that doesn't help. Sorry? All right. Thanks.
Optus called again.
Sorry.
They said we'd like you to do another advert for us.
All right. Finally get there.
Cyclist, halt now. Now, I do not believe you want to be intending to pass under that there low bridge with a high companion and perched atop a ladder that is higher than the aforementioned low bridge.
Point there, Dave.
And you don't want to be riding an old bike with a ladder on it anyway. That's not a modern form of transport. You want to get yourself a nice car like a Nissan Cedric or a Fiat Humberto or a Honda Pessary.
Go and put a deposit on one now.
Cheerio, bye-bye, Tar.
Cheers, mate.
If I'm wrong, but I very, 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 very much doubt that I am. It's never been known to happen before. But I do not believe you wish to persist with this beer pain confusion.
Well, that explains these crippling stomach pains and this disappointingly wishy-washy first coat. Why not?
Cheerio, bye, ta-ta. Only me! You don't want to do whatever you're doing. What is it precisely that you are doing?
Well, I'm just about to test the trigger of my new loaded shotgun while simultaneously licking out a small speck of dust from the barrel with my tongue.
You don't want to test out the trigger of your new loaded shotgun while simultaneously licking out a small speck of dust from the barrel with your tongue? If you do this simultaneously at the same time simultaneously, you shall blow your head off and thus acquire a husbandless wife and fatherless children.
Oh, yeah. He's right, you know, Paul.
You saved my life. How can I ever repay you?
All in a day's work. Cheerio, bye, ta-ta. Morning, 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 morning.
Morning.
Only me. You don't want a taut rope outside your front door. It'll hinder your progress from house to street.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Cheerio, bye, ta-ta. There's something not right about today. I can't quite put my finger on it. Oh, it's all right, actually.
So hopefully we don't want our chief risk officers to be seen as quite as annoying as that guy turning up saying, only me, you don't want to do that. But I'm sure these guys are going to tell us how we can make sure that doesn't happen. So on that note, I will introduce the panel. So first we have...
Is your husband in, madam?
No.
Good.
Technology's not my thing.
It's just that dripping tap.
Look at that, Lance. Look at this toilet.
Okay. Now I'll introduce the panel. First we have Greg. So Greg's got more than 30 years' experience in life insurance and funds management and is currently Clearview's chief actuary and chief risk officer. Greg also recently authored or co-authored a paper titled Dark Risks versus ERM Upside, a collection of risk management thoughts. Second, we'll have Vern Baker. So Vern's had over 20 years' experience in general insurance, working on a range of products from traditional actuarial engagements through to strategic business advisory assignments in many countries, including Australia, the UK, Singapore, China, and Hong Kong. And Vern's currently a director at KPMG. Finally, we'll have Matthew Wilson, who's the Chief Risk Officer at Employers Mutual. So Matthew's background is actually as a corporate lawyer and professional advisor in the fields of risk management, regulatory compliance, and corporate governance practices across the Australian financial services sector. So with that, I will hand over to Greg to kick us off.
Okay, and how do I get my one up there? Because you've got all the skills.
I have now.
Where is the thing?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the introduction, Andy. Obviously, we've only got a few minutes each to talk, so I can't cover the whole subject area, but I thought I'd just throw a few thoughts out there as starters, and between the three of us, hopefully we'll cover the subject. Just a little bit about Clearview for people who maybe don't know it. It's a listed company. It covers a full range of financial services, things from life insurance, superannuation, responsible entity. We have two advice businesses, or dealer groups as they're called, and we have sort of businesses all around Australia. So we have state offices in all the major capitals, and at the moment we're sort of, depending on the line of business, growing somewhere between 30-40%, or even the funds business, which we've only just sort of reinvigorated and got going, is sort of growing at 15% per annum at the moment, or thereabouts. So a fairly diverse business. And a somewhat disruptor and changing business. A little bit about my role for people who don't know me. Given that picture I just showed you at Clearview, you will have noticed we're not the size of Commonwealth Bank. We're somewhat smaller, like only about 200th the size. So Clearview is a small business. My role is not a pure CRO role. And in fact, one of the issues I'd raise for, you know, one of the challenges for CROs at the moment is, in fact, the sort of the classic APRA model, and it's not a criticism of the APRA's model, but yeah, is positioned around probably a CRO for a very large institution. When you get down to smaller institutions, it becomes a little bit more interesting. So my role is, yes, so it includes risk management, and a risk management team, also have actuarial report to me, including appointed actuary, group compliance, some product team, and I sit on various sort of committees and a couple of boards as well. So it's a fairly diverse role. And the business, of course, Clearview itself, goes everything from advice businesses, direct marketing, and sort of manufacturers, as in life and funds management businesses. Okay, to the subject matter. CRO role and challenges. One of the things I'd probably just note is a lot of the actuarial aspects of it, where we, as a profession, whenever you go to anything ERM within the Institute, the actuarial bits of it, asset liability, reinsurance, financial stress testing, capital, all that stuff, I actually probably don't find hard, right? There's a lot to do. APRA always wants you to do more stress testing and all the rest of it. That's all fantastic. But that's actually not the hard part. It's in my comfort zone. The challenges, to my mind, is really around all the stuff that, as actuaries, we don't normally get our hands dirty in too much. And as a chief risk officer or a risk officer in risk management, you definitely do. So all the operational risk and all the strategic stuff. I'll show you a slide in a minute, but just getting across all that space in the modern world is actually a big challenge. Anybody who's even glanced at stuff around cyber risk and trying to understand how a modern life insurer or funds manager with public clouds, private clouds, sub-clouds and all the rest of it, there's a lot just to get your mind across. And that's before you even get into the areas of things like trying to understand measuring some of this stuff and having quantifications around some of these risks, exactly how a risk appetite applies to something that's a yes or a no type of thing, and risk responsive measures. So if you improve something, how do you actually measure what you got out of it? Culture is another big area in this whole space. So you've got the op risk in the sense of all the moving parts, and then you've got the culture of the organisation. And I've said there, it's not just limited to risk culture. You know, again, from our regulators like talking about risk culture, But to my mind, risk culture is just a subset of culture, and really you need to understand culture before you even just get into particular things around risk culture. The other main challenge or area for that interests me a lot is trying to balance engagement in the business versus the realities of the three lines of defence. sort of the tension between classic three lines of defence, where almost drives people into silos or ivory towers, or the annoying guy on the machine a minute ago, through to actually leading risk management in an organisation and actually engendering risk behaviour, you know, good risk behaviours. How do you do that if you're sitting back, being seen as a second line criticiser or challenger? And how do you get in front of decisions, not at the back end of decisions? Easier to change decisions at the front end than it is to change them after people have already made up their mind about things. Some of my current focus areas. So the green stuff down in the bottom right-hand corner that you can see on your screen, that's sort of the classic actuarial sort of stuff. And that probably represents how important it is to my day job. Appointed actuary looks after a lot of that stuff, and he's sitting right there, the man with all those risks. whereas a lot of things that I'm focused on in my day job is all the lot of the blue stuff, which is around a lot of regulatory stuff, life insurance reforms. Still, you know, people think that FOFA's in place, actually understanding still how FOFA works, the risk impacts on the business, what's in, what's out, what's allowed. AML, AUSTRAC, privacy, do not call registers, basically compliance frameworks, compliance systems, work health, safety, managing other risk dimensions like your reputation with the regulator. So it's not just do you meet the regulations, but how does the regulator perceive you? You know, what brownie points, what political capital have you built up with regulators for when things don't go so well? How do you manage that? Change management. I've mentioned a minute ago around things like cyber, IT layers, structures, clouds. For anybody who gets into that stuff, you know, cyber risk is a big risk these days. This is huge. It impacts reputation. You know, you could blow up your AML, burn a few million dollars, blow up your reputation. It's tens, 20 millions of dollars for someone like Clearview. It's billions of dollars if you're a Westpac or somebody. Change management. There's a whole risk element around change management, priorities, pipelines. How does the business strategically arrange these things to give itself both downside risk but also capture upside risk potentials as well? So that's just a little bit of the mindset of a CRO. And if I could put it in a slightly different context, this is a little picture that came out of the paper that Andy referred to, which we, Simon, Lees and I did for the summit earlier this year, where we just looked at the risk universe that face most organisations. So you can split risks and look at them in terms of risks that add value. So things like if you're an insurer, doing insurance risk is something that adds value. That's your business. That's why you're doing it. If you're doing asset liability mismatching, hopefully you're creating economic value by actually doing that. Otherwise, why would you do it? And there's non-value adding risks, which are all the stuff that just comes with whatever you do. So, you know, fraud. There's no value in having exposure to fraud risk. Nobody gives you money around fraud risk. They expect you to have managed that and be zero and be nothing. You get no economic reward for around that risk. So you can split the universe of that. You've got risks that come from inside the entity, so things you generate yourself. You get risks that come from outside the entity. So regulatory change is something that is imposed on you. Yep. And then you've got systemic and specific. So the risks that, you know, when you ask boards around their risk appetite around a thing, oftentimes I'll say the next question is back to the CRO around, well, you know, if we have to go down and visit APRA, are we going to be by ourselves in the waiting room, or will there be other people there with us? Because our appetite around those things is quite different as well. So these are just a way of sort of divvying up the risks. The interesting thing, I think, for actuaries, and this is sort of a CRO actuary sort of, you know, session, is the stuff that we're fairly familiar with is really two boxes there, really, in many respects. They're the insurance risks, the asset risks, asset liability risks, all that sort of stuff, which are all we're fairly familiar with. We all have models for those things. They're in our comfort zone. They generate economic value, so people like to talk to us about that stuff with new product ideas and all that fantastic stuff. As a CRO, in many respects, my weight of my world is probably more in the red box, where we're not so comfortable, where we don't have models for things, where the risks change all the time. One of the interesting things about the green box, you don't want those risks to change, right? So you have an insurance portfolio, you want some car crashes and you want to pay some claims, and next year you want some more car crashes and pay some more claims, because that's the business. You don't have an inquiry as to why there was a car crash, why you paid the claim, and can we stop ever doing that again, right? You don't do that. You actually want it to repeat. Whereas the other risks, the operational risks are, well, what happened? Can we stop it? How do we change it? So whatever you thought you knew and controls yesterday, you've actually changed it tomorrow. So there's a whole new bunch of stuff. And there's a whole bunch of inventive people out there trying to think of new ways of sending you spam emails and all sorts of marvellous things to have crypto locker and things like that coming along. So where as a CRO, where you mainly work is, to my mind, the unfamiliar, the unmoderable, the non-repeating, and where data and, well, I suppose, the actuarial approach to a lot of things isn't necessarily the way you work. So what does all that mean? Just a few high-level observations. In Andy's intro, he sort of mentioned what does it mean for industry. The one thing I'd say is, my observation is, there is actually now, not just for standing APRA's sort of focus on it, or sort of regulators globally and even ASIC these days, there is actually a lot more risk management than we had even a few years ago. There is actually a lot. And we actually do try and do things now around, you know, having coherent risk management frameworks that go across the whole business. So I think we probably, as actuaries, probably had a conceptual idea even a decade ago around the way we would manage our financial risk in a business, but actually having a uniform, a sort of a more uniform, not uniform, but more uniform approach across the whole business to try and take that across the way you look at all your risks is actually, you know, is really still growing and being understood now. Like, you know, it's not a done deal. Risk culture, and indeed culture, there's a lot more focus on that. In fact, I was at a company director's briefing the other day, and culture was the number one subject that was on the list of things at a company director's level. So this is not insurance or financial services. This was all company directors, Australian Institute of Company Directors. Culture was right at the very top. Driver for all sorts of things. Challenges for the CRO, probably already guessed it, all the non-actuarial stuff is actually the challenge, and just the breadth of the brief. I think the three lines of defence, I think I already mentioned that very quickly, that whole thing about being seen as a leader in the business, being on the front foot versus being, you know, a step back from decisions. You know, how do you influence decisions if you're not actually at the table when the decision's being made? And if you're the guy who says no, or the girl who says no, will you be invited to the table? Are you there to actually push people and go, no, 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 you're not taking enough risk, go harder? Some people may have heard me say that before. Are we the anti-risk people, or the people who say, no, go faster? You know, the downside isn't that big. So, you know, that I find is a very, very difficult line to tread. Probably what makes a good CRO, to my mind, probably the biggest thing is understanding the business. In fact, I just had a coffee with another actuary who's thinking, you know, a little bit about where he wants to go in his career now. And I said, have you thought about getting into risk? And he said, oh, I don't know much about that stuff. I've been doing what I'm doing for 20-odd years. And I said, well, you know, there's actually not necessarily too many, there's no professions out there in my mind who own the centre of this space. Everyone's coming at it from a different angle. And the one thing, to my mind, that actuaries bring, or actuaries in particular, but a good CRO, actually is somebody who can understand complex systems and get across something end to end. If you can understand it first, then you can identify the problems. If you can identify the problems, you can do something about them. Whereas if you don't understand it and you don't have the capacity to do it, that's a bit of a problem to start with. I think the other thing that, you know, as far as what's a good CRO and what where actuaries can actually contribute to the space is just understanding risk concepts. You know, that is actually a very powerful thing, that even if you don't necessarily understand, you know, the ins and outs of IT and clouds and all the rest of it, you do, however, come with an inherent understanding around, you know, risk return, costs, cost benefits, and all that sort of stuff. And then the last question, I think, how does actuaries and CROs and chief actuaries and all that interact? And there's a bit of a question there. I think a lot of people think they, you know, is one overlapping on the other? My experience so far would be to say, look, if you do these things properly, there's actually not much conflict because there's so much to do. You know, I'd quite happily leave the actuarial function to look after a lot of the actuarial risk because I want to actually focus most of my time on all the stuff that's the genuinely harder stuff to manage and where I have to try and work with the broader part of the business, whether it's the advice part of the business or the funds management part of the business and all sorts of stuff that's not necessarily the core actuarial function, to actually understand all that stuff around reputations and all that sort of thing. In fact, it's great to have a good actuarial team who can comfortably look after some of the stuff for you. So that's my little wander through the countryside. And now, what do I have to do? Escape. There you go. Burn.
Cheers.
Failed that. Yeah. All right.
Good afternoon.
Sorry about that interlude, but we'll probably have a few more hitches along the way, knowing my presentations. Okay, I work at KPMG, but unusually I've scored a role as an outsourced CRO. So I've actually, from January 1st this year, worked for Lawcover Insurance. So just a little bit of a background on Lawcover to give you some context, but essentially it's a monoline company that basically has a monopoly on providing professional indemnity insurance to the New South Wales and ACT solicitors. So in essence, apart from PI having some complexities about it, it's actually quite a straightforward company. It only has one renewal date, for example, so it only goes through one premium pricing sort of exercise. So it's pretty well capitalised. It's grown capital quite strongly in the last few years, and that's been largely due to a lot of operational efficiencies that the management team's done. So it's quite fortunate in the respect that it's not a role that I go to bed every night and wonder if the company's going to have something bad happening the next day, because really, it's more the emerging risks that are probably the things that would keep my mind going. So, just in context, GWP of about $74 million, APRA requiring a chief risk officer for this company. They thought outsourcing was quite a good way to meet the APRA standards. So that's the background. Just some of the, I think, key, prerequisites for the CRO role. I think, you've got to, as best you can, build up a good understanding of the organisation and really where it's going and what its strategy and what its challenges are, because they all will impact on the risk. I'm sort of mostly concerned about things that could really hurt the company. I mean, I don't care about day-to-day sort of minor things. You know, you've got the company processes to worry about that, so there's a whole lot of infrastructure there, but it's really, what could really hurt the company? And then in terms of those company processes, are they good controls in place, and are there any key limitations surrounding those controls? So that's sort of where I get to when I'm sort of moving down and down that thing. And like I said, I'm quite concerned. Well, not concerned, but, the worry is, well, if you're in such a good state, what could come out and bite you in the future? So that's what occupies the minds of people. I think Greg touched on the fact that it's not really a doctor no role at all. It's supposed to be actually a risk enabler role. So it's not there to be overly prudent. It's to use, capital and risk for the company's benefit. You've got to, I think, really be interested in and happy to engage with people, because you've got to really you've got to understand the board members and where they're coming from. So if you want to do the role, you've got to really be prepared to listen and contribute there. And then I think it's not like a role also where you're the appointed actuary for a company and then you do your ILVR and then you don't worry about it for 6 months. It's an ongoing thing, so you've got to be responsive and ready to assist at any point of time. Coming into the role in January, obviously, I don't think there's, well, I'm not sure, there might be some very clear job descriptions or textbooks on how to do a CRO role, but I didn't read any of those. So it was just trying to basically working out what, you know, how to do the role in the first place was sort of quite a occupied some time. And then getting into the role, you know, you're sort of quite keen to get involved in things, but there's this issue of first line versus second line. So case in point, they had a session on PML, so had a PML workshop, and I was sort of quite upset that I didn't get invited to go to that PML workshop, but actually my role was to actually review the process and the outcome and the findings and all that, and because otherwise it could well have been that I might have been self-reviewing. So that is quite a challenge, you know, working out, well, what's first and second line along the way. And then sort of one of my other key challenges is sort of sitting in the board meetings, and they're asking me questions about certain things which probably are sort of a little bit left field and probably not really in the role, and it's sort of managing their expectations. So, you know, do you have a line of sight on, you know, what the company's policy on outsourcing is or stuff like that? And, you know, I think, you know, you've got to work through these things and work out what's important or not, but that's a bit challenge at times. For new people coming into a role, I think obviously you've got to try and get a quick overview of the organisation. Certainly NFCR is a great way to do that. I think getting very close to the risk register and understanding how those risks are put on and maintained and the process by which they are sort of put on is, you know, and considered is definitely good. I basically set out a plan to actually do deep dives into the work as it was evolving. So when I first joined, they were going through the reinsurance renewal. So basically I put a lot of time into going through that process, and then a few months later, it was a pricing thing and then the actuarial. So if you are able, you know, rather than sort of coming in and trying to sort of read all this material at the beginning, I think it's far better to actually be engaged in an actual business process, because you tend to work well there. I think actuarial skills are really useful, but it's more just, you know, I think they quite like some of my back of the envelope type assessments, you know, sort of the more, you know, fundamental sort of things. Well, what's really happening here? You know, we don't need to know the exact quantum of what the outcome is, but it could be this sort of thing like that. So I think that's really where the skills of the actuary come through. It's a judgment. You don't need to be, you know, you don't want to baffle them with science and crap like that. It's really just getting on to, you know, the fundamentals. And I think you have to be a good listener for the role. So there is a lot of, you know, particularly the board meetings, there will be a whole different set of backgrounds of people there, and, you know, some of their ways of thinking are way different than actuaries, but goodness me, they're pretty sharp people, you know, lawyers included sort of thing, and it's really quite instructive. And you know, over time, you know, it's engaging with the management and staff. So risk culture, you know, sort of, you know, look, I mean, these things take time. It's just sort of getting involved. So I've been fortunate. I was at a strategic planning meeting for the company a couple of days ago. I think, you know, at the outset of my engagement, I don't think there was any thought that I'd be going to things like that. They thought it was sort of like more a compliancy APRA type role. So, you know, there's a possibility to really evolve in this. Yeah, so the rewards to me are really, my background is a consultant, so I've never really got into any organisation in any depth, you know, or seen things carried through. I've, you know, helped them with M&As or done actuarial reviews or what have you, but, you know, sort of, you finish a project and then you get onto something else, but it's really, you can actually now start to sort of see things through, which I think is, you know, would be good for some people of the profession. I don't think it's particularly dull dull sort of role, because you're certainly, you've got to be on the spot for anything that could come out, and be prepared to come up with some pretty quick answers at board meetings. Things that I really really do enjoy are the just sort of the opportunities to learn so much more. So the reinsurance placement, you know, it's not about getting the price necessarily. It's more sort of the strategy and who are the players, and you know, it's, you know, there's a whole lot of other stuff there before, you know, because there's a whole lot of other stuff going on apart from just the, you know, the economic things that an actuary would probably quickly sort of say, well, yeah, we should go with them because of that sort of thing. And, you know, sort of also getting involvement with people who've been through, you know, various cycles and stuff like that, you know, having experience of, you know, going through a crash or, you know, a tightening reinsurance market is quite good to have. I mean, currently we've got a very, very soft market, but, you know, these people know that, you know, sooner or later things could change and, you know, they may not be able to get the cover that they could get in the past. And, you know, I'm just really enjoying the engagement of being, you know, part of the team. So, let's see. That's it. But I'd certainly, you know, recommend to any actuary that this is a good role. In terms of interaction with the other actuary, well, in theory, the appointed actuary for law cover is a competitor of mine. But it was a little bit funny for the first couple of meetings. But you pretty much assess that you've got your own specific roles out there, and you know, you can sort of build up, you know, good working relationships with people. You know, I think you've got to stay focused on what what's your role and what his role is, and try and help each other. So that's a good one. Okay, thanks.
Liz. Oh, I can't seem to get back to the root menu.
No, that's all right. Should already be open anyway.
Oh, fantastic.
Hello, everyone. I'm Matt Wilson. I'm the CRO and General Counsel at Employers Mutual. Why am I here today? We're very lucky to have Sam Fuller as our head of our actuarial services team, and she asked me to come down and have a chat with you today. From a professional's perspective, acting in the role of CRO and also as the general counsel. Prior to taking on that role at Employers Mutual, I had lots of hats at Employers Mutual, including company secretary and a few other things. I looked after the internal audit team, so essentially had a multidisciplinary governance practice, and then CPS 220 comes our way and we dismantle what I thought was a very efficient practice to separate lines 2 and 3 in the organisation. We've been able to transition to that quite well. It's a little less efficient for us now, but relationships and communication seem to be what keeps it working very well together. To minimise the double up. But you don't really have the same imputed knowledge that you once had in a multidisciplinary practice, so it's less efficient and ultimately costs the organisation more today than it did back before CPS 220. Right. A little bit about Employers Mutual. It's our CEO, Mark Coyne. We've been around for over 100 years. We are a mutual established by an accounting firm, and all we do is help people get better and go back to work. So our mission is to have a positive impact on people and help them get their lives back and get them back to work. That's what we do all day, every day. A little bit more about EML. So we're a mutual insurance company. We manage personal injury and disability claims. We operate 2 general insurers. We operate Employers Mutual, and we operate a specialised joint venture insurance company, small insurance company called Hospitality Employers Mutual, writing long tail insurance. So have quite a lot of exposure to the actuarial profession, but also in relation to the challenges of running a small general insurance company in long tail business. Very much a people-to-people business, because that's all we do. We work with people every day. So there's no surprises that we are what we would call a honeybee organisation, where everyone works very, very closely together, and we as an organisation achieve some very, very good things. We have about 1,500 people with our operations across Australia and in Asia. We have operations in Philippines, Malaysia and Vietnam, and we do a lot of our IT and our processing in those countries. We have probably one of the most enviable employee engagement scores across the country, and we are developing our risk culture scoring with our employee engagement people, Towers Watson, to help us correlate risk culture across the organisation to give us some quantitative indicators on our risk culture. So it's a continuing work in progress, and we also aim to be very highly regarded in our market. So as a small company, we have quite a low tolerance to anything that will damage our reputation in the markets in which we operate. So what makes a good CRO? Let's start. I think that actuaries probably make or have the inherent skill set to make probably the best CROs. And I think it was either Greg or Vern, is because they can take complexity and put it down into simplicity. And a lot of people can't do that. Lawyers use lots of words. But the actuaries can take very, very complex concepts, especially financial concepts, and bring it down to a level of simplicity. If you read your FCR, or if you read an investigating actuaries report in a scheme for transfer, for example, in a life scheme, and you actually get to see brevity but powerfulness in what they do. So that indicates that they're right over their subject matter. Good CRO is all over their subject matter, cognizant that they've got to sit in line too. One of the things I've learnt from being in the CRO role, and I was fortunate that Employers Mutual embarked on a 3-year program of awareness and leadership for our people. And so we've done a lot of work in this space, and you get a really good sense of who you are, your style, the impact it has on other people, and what you can actually do with it, and how you can work really well with people and engage with them across your business. No one teaches you this stuff in university, but it's a really powerful skill if you're an actuary and you're very much a mind-based person, and it enables you to actually build a capability to support a role that engages just about with anyone across the organisation. So understanding of human behaviour and its drivers, in my mind, it has been imperative in sitting in the CRO chair at Employers Mutual. I get to read fear very quickly. I get to understand when there's pockets of avoidance. So what's driving people, particularly in the organisation, that's really powerful stuff. And that stuff you can't really measure. So coming from a background of maths and measurement, this is a very different concept. And I'll go through in a moment and tell you how I've been able to work with this. You have two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. So your style in the organisation is a listener, observing, allowing everyone to have their say is vitally important because they'll come and engage with you. You've got to have a really good tolerance for coaching and mentoring. You'll have people with all levels of skill and educational backgrounds across your organisation, and for some way they'll come to see the CRO, and you've got to be able to welcome them within the organisation. One of the things I did at Employers Mutual, we have one CRO for 1,500 people, and in each of our business units, one of the business unit managers or general manager's direct reports is also the business unit risk manager. So they have a day job. So I've developed this risk community, and I've skilled them up and taken them on this journey, which allows for people in the business unit to have a first line of call and then referral up to the CRO. So the CRO is not just the focal point for every risk decision in the business unit. And then I give them decision-making authority in relation to reputation risk, financial risk, etc. The rest of the points, objectivity during situational events, your temperament's really important in this one. And personal development in that space, the psychology space, for me has been outstanding in terms of what I've been able to achieve across the organisation in terms of developing my high energy style down to something that was workable in the organisation for a role at this level. If any of you that have worked with me, you'd know that I can get a lot done. Getting a duty statement together, there was no such thing. Like, there was no professional standard duty statement. So I went to the APRA CPS 220 standard because we needed to have a CPS 220 CRO, so I just drew it up from there and submitted it up to the CEO and went to the board, and that's what I get assessed against by the board. I think I'm the only person in the organisation that has a performance review done by the board. But anyway, that's really good because it focuses you on those really important things in the organisation in terms of what you're going to achieve in an organisation that is an effective risk taker, that is people knowingly being able to take risks. So we have conversations not about being the deal prevention unit and saying, no, you can't do that because it's out of tolerance. It's about getting them to understand what is the impact of what they're seeking to do in the organisation. Is it within the strategy? Is it within the capital management, and get them to understand the financial acumen across the organisation? Getting to identify where people don't have an understanding of those key drivers across the organisation. So one of the things I did when we went into ICAP during the LAGIC period, I said to the CEO, I said, I want everyone in the organisation to understand our strategic map, 5 key things that we're doing, and everyone sticks to the timeline. So when I get to 30 June midnight, we have our strategic plan finished, budget's all signed off, and everyone's on the starting blocks on the 1st of July. And then take them through the journey down at each business unit level. So the CRO played a pretty important role in getting people to understand strategy, but also the risks associated in their business unit in not achieving that particular business unit strategy. And for us, it all usually comes down to return on our expenses, meeting the target of return on expenses in our risk appetite statement. Taking the board through the journey as well. We have a board that comes from diverse walks of life. They're not all actuaries. So taking through that was also quite a challenge, but it was a learning because they asked questions from a different perspective and a lot of left field ones, I think, as these guys have outlined earlier. I'm going to touch on professional standards in a moment because as a lawyer, I've had to operate within professional standards, and that's the real tension in being an actuary or a lawyer as a CRO. So always maintaining professional standards is absolutely essential. So why are actuaries good fits for CROs? Well, I've outlined this a little bit earlier, but just go through it. They're very good at thinking things through. So many people will come to my table and they just haven't thought anything through. So actuaries are very, very good at being able to do that. Very good at scenarios and predictive thinking. You want your organisation to be in that predictive zone. Actuaries are really good about that. They sort of know about where an organisation could go in terms of the financial side of things. So it's about bringing people on that journey. Lawyers tend to be good with words, understand legal risk, and generally like to chattel up. But they're not very good generally with financial side. I've been very lucky because I've actually reported to appointed actuaries and actuaries for most of my working life across life and general insurance. And I'm also very lucky because my collective skill set, my war chest internally comprises of an actuary, someone I can go to and have a talk to about the financial impacts of something we might be considering. But this is the other dimension, psychologists. I have a psychologist that I work with, and being able to understand not only the organisational psychology issues, but also issues in relation to key people, in relation to myself and my performance and my style. And I have found that to be a really, really, really powerful mix to bring that into your war chest of collective skill set in the office of CRO. So, multiple hats. APRA and multiple hats. It's a reality for small companies. So I sit as the chair of CRO, GC and Group Privacy Officer. And it's very clear in my discussions with APRA that provided I'm not doing line one work and I've got someone to do it, so I have risk managers in every business unit. I have a senior legal counsel and legal counsel that do all of the line one work. So I just make determinations on
on legal risk appetite. Is this particular indemnity within our appetite, for example? And group privacy officer, just look at the escalated privacy complaints or issues and set the policy. So it doesn't conflict with the line two requirements under APRA's standard, but it's really important to understand what are the potential conflict risks. So for me, being a lawyer, I have a duty to the court and a duty to uphold the law. So I'll never enter into an agreement that I know that someone's not going to honour. So that's one of those things that I have to follow. And I'll talk about the actuary's professional code of conduct in a moment. But never compromise your professional responsibility, because as a CRO, you actually do deep dive into those things in the organisation that are important. You'll still do it from line two, but you'll actually input in to the collective think tank of what the organisation is going to do. That's the risky area for a CRO as an actuary or as a lawyer, because you've got to make sure that your professional responsibility to your institute's code of conduct, because you'll still hold your actuarial membership of the institute. So you've got to be very aware of that. And you can actually establish, in my opinion, your practice as a CRO and maintain those protections as well. I take advice from third parties, so if I've got a particular legal matter that's causing me an issue, I will get someone else to look at it rather than look at it myself, so I don't compromise myself as a lawyer. Similarly, for actuaries, as external peer review actuaries, I have two of those every year for both my insurance companies, so peer review, peer review, peer review. You're actually used to that, so I don't see that as a problem. It's one way of being able to deal with these things, get opinion from someone else that's not in your situation. If it doesn't feel right, listen to your gut. It's the priority of professional responsibility at all times, and that's the start and the end of it. And discuss with the CEO and chairman, and you can also call the institute. When you're in an organisation as an actuary or a lawyer, and you're also acting as a CRO, you actually might have multiple lenses on, but you still have the same prescription. And what I mean here, and I did this for a very good reason, is to reflect your industry code of conduct. You must act with integrity, honesty and due care, and in a manner that seeks to uphold the reputation of the profession. And I won't read it all out for you, but think about the potential tensions, and don't just leave this one sitting on the website. Read it sometime. That is your code of professional conduct. Phone a friend's always good. I do that. Phone a friend, get someone else's opinion. So the Institute encourages you to do that as well. Phone another colleague and ask them about a situation, have the confidential chat with them. If I was going into a role now and I was establishing the CRO, and I would document the arrangements where my professional responsibility issues were potentially compromised and put in place those documented arrangements for how we would actually deal with those. So that's just a little tip. APRA seems to think that if you're on a fixed remuneration and you're doing a couple of hats, that seems to be the indication that that's okay, provided you're not charging separate remuneration for, say, in my case, the GC hat. So they seem to be okay with that. Just finishing off now. The actuary CRO is powerful. You bring together the skills and acumen of an actuary. You add excellent communication and engagement skills, and anyone that's been in consulting understands what that is about or worked in a large organisation. It allows you to advise on risk-taking, not as the deal prevention unit, and helping the organisation make judgment calls on risk tolerance. Now, a lot of people just can't get that from, the board-approved risk appetite statement into what that actually translates to. And that's where your skills can be able to synthesise the complex into the simple to help people come to a view is really sensible. In my opinion, I think it's quite rewarding and satisfying to see the organisation achieve its strategy, make money, and no surprises. And I say to people, I'd like to know the outcome before it occurs, please. And that's sort of one of my taglines at Employers Mutual. I want to know the outcome before it occurs, so no surprises. Okay, we sometimes have external events, but you know what I'm talking about. Most of the risks inside an organisation are people-based. They're
decisions that human beings make and understanding how they tick is a real asset to the CRO. Watch lists for actuaries and other professional people. Your professional responsibility, yes, I'm going to nag on that now. Your intelligence. You are intelligent people. Just be careful in terms of how you utilise that style because your clients come from all walks of life. You've got to keep it simple and make it easy for people to engage with you. And that's an advocacy thing. A lot of us actually learn that as we sort of go into professional life. In my opinion, a CRO style can enable a healthy risk culture or they can disable it. I get to see them across town a bit. You want to be able to have your business take on risk, knowingly take on risk and make those decisions and feel safe and be able to check in with you. Rather than the CRO just being the only point of contact to make a decision on risk in the organisation. Getting to that spot is just a wonderful sweet spot to get to. It's a lot of work, but at the end of the day, it is also very simple. The organisational values really got to align to your values. No point being in an organisation where if your personal values and the values of integrity and honesty cannot be accorded, well, you know straight away you've got a problem and you need to rethink whether you would take on that assignment. I still think that peer review is a very, very important thing and I would continue to seize peer review even in the CRO role as you would in the actuary role and as we do in the legal profession. Every piece of work that goes out of our organisation has two or four sets of eyes over it, depending on who's got glasses or not, to ensure that the work is correct and accurate. So peer review is also a very useful tool. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. That was all really quite informative, and hopefully everyone enjoyed that. So we now have some time for questions for you to put to the panel. Yep.
My question, I guess, is for you, Greg. You sort of mentioned that it's important, the areas that are, as actuaries, as we're trained, we can sort of understand the financial risk. But how, as an actuary, do you learn the skills about how clouds work, the procedures? Because the operational risk is really driven by the particular policies that you sort of follow and most staff follow. So how did you get across that?
You just have to start talking to people and learning it. I don't really know how else I can answer the question, really. That was the hard part about the job. You know, as I said, as actuaries, we're not used to working day-to-day in the administration area. We don't tend to, you know, yes, we know about fraud, but do we actually get our hands dirty in that stuff? No, we sit in our little ivory tower. But actually having to do that stuff, get involved with people, and really, that's a whole piece around the, you know, leadership, personal relationship stuff. I think, you know, Matt talked about psychology. You have to be somebody who's very approachable and just be out there networking within your business the whole time. So, I mean, that's all I've done is just keep asking questions and, as an actuary, try and synthesise what makes sense. And if it doesn't make sense, you just keep asking questions. You ask somebody else and you come back and after a few years, you might figure it out. But the interesting thing is when you ask enough questions and you realise some of the IT people haven't figured it out, really don't have a better answer than that.
Anybody else got any questions?
I would talk to the CIO. You're talking about cloud-based stuff. Remember, you've got a war chest of people in the organisation that are subject matter experts on stuff. And I did that. I had a chat to our CIO, and I said to him that our risk tolerance was our data ain't going anywhere, and please excuse the vernacular, it ain't going anywhere until we know where it's going. So if anyone uses Net Promoter Score around here, I tracked the data all the way around the world and decided this is how we were going to de-identify our data because we do work for WorkCover and it had to satisfy those requirements. So some days it's a lot of hard work. Some days you've got to get people on the journey of really doing the job properly.
But there are a number of subject data experts, even within your own organisation, that can really help you be able to make those determinations. So for us, we've got a simple policy that sits on our intranet site to our people that says, if you're thinking about going to cloud, and we're not talking about Facebook or Twitter that you use in your personal life or your Gmail account, you've got to come and have a chat with the risk manager and let them know what you're thinking about doing, and we'll work with you on that one.
Jenny Lyon. Matt, you mentioned in your talk about how the style of the CRO could have a very positive or very negative impact. And I just wondered if you'd like to expand on that. Thank you.
Small organisations and large organisations are very different in how they may implement the CRO function. Small organisation, you don't want the focus on one person. You want the focus on taking the organisation on the journey. So you would want to minimise the risk of concentration of one person and their style in the function. You're really just the steward for the function as I see it. So the way I managed it, I knew I had a fairly strong style. I knew I had a fairly exacting style in terms of the standards that I seek to achieve. In each part of the business, I got people to put their hands up. They had to be direct reports of the business unit head to act as risk managers within the quasi-line one. They were in line one, but they're actually representing line two risk management. And they have each and have their own style, but they also have a very good depth to their business. So they get their own identity across the organisation. And what we have developed right across our business and is a risk community. They give me very clear feedback about things within that community, so it's quite collegiate. So take the focus off the person, put it onto the process and the framework, and to develop a community within the organisation is how it's worked for us quite well in a 1,500-man monoline operation.
Okay, thanks. So that really, I think, points very much to the importance of the self-awareness that you spoke about of the CRO, because somebody who has a very directive style could potentially be very unaware that their style is having an impact on the culture.
Go through leadership journey. There's lots of them out there. We've done three or four different types now. We've worked with Gail Avery, Professor Gail Avery. We've done another two sessions. We've taken our whole exec team through it, and we've taken every level of the organisation through it so they understand what drives them from the first nanosecond of reaction to interaction with people. So there's a great level of self-awareness across the team, and I think we found that to be a very, very strong thing. The point is, though, is that you can't measure it, but I actually see day-to-day how people have grown. So I wouldn't underestimate the human elements here. It's a developing area, and most organisations don't have that inherent skill set to be able to bring them on the journey. I actually have a psychologist coach that just keeps in check with my style and also a barometer across the organisation. But I also send her in when I've got particular incident management and issues that I have to deal with. So, for example, we had a whole host of injured workers take to all of our people on Facebook, and we had a social media attack. And she was able to help us in the defuse and defend strategy. So it was being able to mobilise the psychological help then and there in a triage situation, but also to look at it in the greater sense. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Matt, you made a good point then, which is actually goes back to the original question that was asked over here. It's actually, you said about two eyes, two ears and one mouth. The other thing about the mouth is you probably should laugh a lot if you're the CRO. And people probably know I can have an inappropriate sense of humour sometimes. But you have to be somebody who, when people come and tell you stuff, it's not their problem. You have to actually be able to, it's not the person's fault who came and tell you something. So if you want to know something about IT and all that sort of thing, there's lots of people in the organisation who actually know all that stuff. And if you can surface what they're worried about out to you, is a good way of finding things. And the best way of doing that is being completely approachable, that if somebody's got a worry about something, they're quite happy to come and sit in your office and blab on and you go laugh, you might bang your head on the table, have a bit of a laugh, okay, let's go talk to somebody about that, rather than being, you know, any form of defensive, you know, I don't want to know, that's a problem sort of stuff. It's so important.
If I can just add a couple of cents with, I'm very lucky that, you know, the culture of my organisation is really supporting people to, you know, if they stuff up, come and tell, you know, if there's a problem, come and tell. In fact, the board, we'd sort of had many meetings where there'd been no incidents or breaches, and they say, well, oh, how do you know it's not working sort of thing? Well, they were overjoyed a month or so back because there was a very minor incident that sort of got up to that level, but that sort of showed that people were, you know, they didn't really feel like there was any blame involved in that. So it's, I guess I'm pretty lucky. I don't have to really sort of perhaps deal with some of the other issues, but obviously from the top down.
Well, while you've got the microphone, Vern, actually had a quick question. But it was kind of interesting that you said before that you were specifically not invited to a PML meeting because you needed to be independent. That kind of really started me thinking back to a question I posed at the start. Have we gone too far with the three lines of defence model?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, this was fairly early in my piece. I probably would have gone to that meeting now sort of thing. I think they were probably just a little bit titchy about, you know, APRA and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, I think it still is a challenge, you know. You know, you feel like you want to make input, but I guess you can do that. I still do make input when I review the stuff anyway, sort of thing. So, it might have just been sort of like a teething issue, you know, at the beginning.
But, Matthew, I know you mentioned before as well that you kind of were forced to restructure your organisation in response to CPS 220. I mean, do you have a strong view on the three lines of defence, and have we gone too far?
Andy, it was a really interesting situation. I think APRA's ICAP was excellent. It actually got organisations to really understand capital and capital drivers, and let's face it, the days of the FCR going on the board table and just being noted are over. I think ICAP was clever. It really brought risk, strategy decision and capital allocation and capital sensitivities and understandings right across the organisation. So big tick in the box there. To mandate how you'll do your risk management is another one. I'm not so sure about. I think there needs to be some separation. I think the functions, that is your assurance function line three, should always report to your board audit committee. Everyone had that already in place, and there was always very clear lines of reporting to your audit committee chair, so that was already in place. Your head of risk management already was reporting to the board risk and compliance committee, had direct reporting lines there already. What I grieve over now is the loss of the efficiency that we have with the people all co-located and being able to work as a team, so that when a business unit manager comes to me and says, I want to use this, I want to take on this initiative, so ordinarily I'd have my head of internal audit there, and we could sit there and discuss not only just the risk decision making, but also how we may do some pre-implementation assurance over what their proposed control environment looks like. So all of that sort of working together now is not so clear. I mean, we do try to keep it as close as possible, but if you're not oversighting it, which I was previously, you don't actually have that single point of contact and think, you know, I can make that judgment now and say, Swazik, head of audit, you can go and look at this bit. Maddie Wilson, risk, you go and you'll go and just do a look at the risk assessment, or maybe deep dive in here and there. So I think you've lost some of that now, in my opinion. One of the benefits, though, of having the separation of the functions is that separate board audit committees and separate risk committees, there is a little bit more focus in each of those committees on the matters at hand. I think that's the one thing. So, if I had a choice, I'd probably go back to where we were, because there were a number of multidisciplinary practices around town that were very efficient, and a lot of those people, especially in some of the life companies, they've lost their leadership, they've lost their executive, and you know, some of them are reporting in no man's land now. So that, in my mind, was not an outcome I don't think anyone ever intended.
Great. We probably have time for one last question, if anybody has one. Oh, one at the front.
I was wondering if you'd also say something about how the CRO manages strategic risk. I was glad to see it listed in Greg's slides, but I figure that there are plenty of challenges there, and I'm with a particular emphasis on the difference between a shareholder organisation and a mutual as to how they look at strategic risk and handle it.
I'll answer your question the following way. I think ICAP changed the playing game for everybody. No longer could you just put strategy on the shelf and hope you get there. I see risk, the ultimate outcome for risk management is the achievement of strategy. We might be a mutual, but we're actually a joint venture partnership and between an entrepreneurial management company and a mutual company. So we have a very healthy tension that goes on between the organisations and very very tightly managed profit hurdles that we work towards, which is unusual in a stereotypical mutual organisation. So very similar to what I've seen in shareholder organisations, we still have the tension to perform. One of the things I found, though, as a CRO, I was able to influence the strategic planning cycle. And for us, and I refer to us a lot because it is an experience and I've seen it work, was to start it in November each year. And so that by the time we got to our financial year end, we've got everybody that's been through the management strategy session, the board strategy session, all the budgeting and planning, all of the reforecasting, all the things that people need to do are all done. And we've built that rigour into it. And that's now part of something we reference in our risk management framework to make sure that the rigour is not lost if, for example, we had a change of CRO or something like that. Did that answer your question?
I guess from my organisation's situation, they are a monopoly. They do work for one profession, but they're not a mutual. They're owned by the Law Society, so that sort of creates some interesting tensions. But sort of looking strategically, you know, a big risk is that, you know, one day the market may well open. So this is sort of open to competition, you know, from the conventional insurers. So this is certainly... presence of mind, future proofing for our organisation is top of mind. And certainly as the CRO, I've been quite well engaged in the fact that the strategic, has gone to their strategic planning, away day type things to be across all those issues because they are, you know, they're going to have big impacts in the next few years. So it's certainly a place where I've certainly been, as a CRO, been asked to come in and make input and listen and understand.
One of the observations, Paul, I'd make is just because you're called the Chief Risk Officer and therefore you've got risk in your title, you tend to actually consciously think about risk when you look at lots of things in the organisation. So, you know, strategy can be, whether you're talking about, you know, the big picture strategy, what our market is, what we're going to attack, down to prioritising change management within the business, because you're the Chief Risk Officer and you've got risk in your title, you will tend to look at things and ask yourself dumb questions like, is that the best way to do it? What's the exit strategy when it doesn't work? Is there, you know, asking questions around, is there a better way of doing this that we could have more optionality in what we do? So the strategy could be, you know, we want to do this, and you just because you're the risk officer, you sit back asking yourself, what are the other things that could happen out of this? Do we want to have the optionality that we go this way, but halfway down we decide it's a bad idea and so you actually want to take that hill over there because it was available? And I just, you know, personally, I just think when you've got people in the organisation whose title is, you know, specifically caring about risk, you tend to automatically start asking those sorts of dumb questions as opposed to being head of distribution, I've got to get X sales. Or I'm head of IT, I've got to put this system in and that thing there and I've got this deliverable, which drives a certain way of doing things, might be minimum cost, but doesn't necessarily introduce optionality. Because I think half of what I think about all the time is the options. Real options, what's the exit point? How do you cut this thing off if it's not working? How do you make it run harder if it works really well? Because there's both sides. And it's just, I find just because I'm the CRO, that's my day job to do that stuff. So that's where you contribute.
And if I could just add to that, I mean, I think a couple of observations I'd have. One of the most important links you'll have there is between risk appetite and your strategy. So where does your strategy take you, and actually where does it have you sitting relative to your appetites? And that's a really important link. But also the job of a CRO isn't necessarily just saying take less risk. So, you know, a typical insurer will probably make as much profit or thereabouts from its investment side as it will from its insurance risk side. So challenging and saying, well, how much risk are we willing to take there and how well controlled is our environment? And if you're not taking any risk or you're very, very benign in your investment portfolio as a CRO, you should be kind of asking why. And actually, we could potentially get a better risk-reward trade-off by taking more risk in the investment space rather than more in the insurance space. So I think that's an important place you can potentially play as well. And on that, we are out of time. So thank you very much to our panel. Please join me in thanking you.